Today, there are a variety of options to treat or enhance the cornea, and it's important for patients to understand not only what the cornea is, but what's available so they choose the procedure that's right for them. We're going to talk about it today with Dr. Joanne Kang, Director of Cornea and Refractive Surgery and Associate Professor of Ophthalmology and Visual Sciences at Montefiore Medical Center. This is Montefiore Med Talk, a podcast from Montefiore Medical Center. My name is Prakash Chandran. So, Dr. Kang, great to have you here today. Let's just start by a basic overview of what the cornea is.
Sure. So the cornea, I like to think about it as the window to the eye. It's the clear, most anterior structure of the eye and allows us to see.
Yeah, and I actually just had a more basic question. What causes some people like myself to need glasses or need those corrective lenses to see properly versus others who just have seemingly very good vision and don't need any sort of corrective lenses at all?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it's because of for two or three different reasons. One is it could just be related to the length of the eyeball. So for a lot of people who are nearsighted, their eyeball is longer than average. And so they need glasses or contact lenses to correct for that difference. You can also have a need for glasses or contact lenses because your cornea, either the curvature is too strong or too weak, and they can bend the light rays differently. And then you can also have changes in your prescription due to the lens of the eye. So it can be for a variety of reasons, but most commonly it's related, especially in younger people, to either the length of the eyeball or the power of the cornea being too strong or too weak.
Okay, that's really helpful. So let's now talk about the different procedures that I guess can occur on the cornea itself. I know that there's LASIK, I know that there's transplants. Maybe talk about, at a high level, the different procedures that are available.
Sure. So I'll start with LASIK. So LASIK is a type of refractive surgery, and LASIK is good for people who wear glasses or contact lenses and would like to reduce their dependency on them in order to see well uncorrected. And so LASIK is a procedure. We use a femtosecond laser to basically change the shape of the cornea in order for that person to see clearly without glasses or contact lenses. And then on the other spectrum, corneal transplants, which you mentioned, and there are many different types actually, they are for people with advanced corneal disease. So, you know, this is beyond needing glasses or contact lenses, but who actually have pathology in the cornea, and they will require a transplant, which is tissue donated from someone who passed away.
Okay, so just a summary explanation, just to make sure that I understand. On one side, you have LASIK, which is kind of more corrective. It's to help people see a little bit better. There's nothing necessarily wrong. And on the transplant side, it's when there is, as you say, a pathology or something wrong that needs to be fixed within the cornea itself. Is that correct?
Yes, that is absolutely correct.
Okay, so let's focus on LASIK here for a minute. People typically get it because they want to see better, as you mentioned. So at what point are they a good candidate, or what age should they be considering getting it?
Yeah, so I think that the best time to get LASIK is in the 20s and 30s for a few good reasons. So when you're younger than 21, your eye is still developing, is still growing and changing. So I wouldn't recommend getting LASIK at that age because, like I said, the eye is changing and you don't want to do a procedure and then have it change a year later. So, you know, you don't want too young. And then on the flip side, I would say it's not that you can't get LASIK when you're in your 40s or 50s, but what happens to all of us as we get older is we lose our ability to accommodate or to focus at close-up ranges. And that's just the aging change of the eye. And so if I were to fix somebody's vision for distance and they would see crystal clear and see very well far away, they would still need to wear glasses for reading, not because the LASIK didn't work, but because their eye is getting older and can't focus close up. So really the best time to be glasses free or contact lens free and enjoy that good vision would be in the 20s and 30s.
Okay, and if someone does get LASIK in their 20s and 30s, once they hit 40 and 50 years old, would they have to get a readjustment?
Yeah, so I do counsel all my patients that if, say, my LASIK patient's 25 years old, that when he or she is maybe 45 or 50, that they may need to wear reading glasses. And I think most people do understand that because they see their parents or grandparents or family members who do need to wear reading glasses. And that's, again, just a part of getting older rather than something went wrong with the LASIK. So there would not be any type of touch-up or what we call enhancement needed for that because, again, that's just a function of your eye getting older just as our body ages.
Yeah, and just to be clear, it doesn't seem like you recommend any sort of cornea surgery after the age of 40. Is that correct?
Well, yes and no. I mean, so again, you can do LASIK in your 40s or 50s as long as you understand you will still need to wear glasses for reading. Some people do what we call monovision. So one eye will be for distance and one eye will be for near vision so they can kind of get around the differences in distance and reading vision. Although I don't necessarily recommend that for everybody because sometimes it's hard to get used to. A lot of people, as we get older, also develop cataracts. And when you get cataracts, you can have cataract surgery. And then we have special intraocular lenses that can actually correct for both distance and near vision. So it kind of hits the sweet spot for both things. But that's a whole other topic. So there are things there for people who are on the older side. But it's different than cornea surgery.
Okay, got it. So let's now go to the cornea transplant side of things. So this is typically when there's a pathology and there is something wrong. Let's maybe start by you talking a little bit about when this typically occurs or if it's something that just evolves over time.
Yeah, so one of the most common indications for corneal transplant, especially among younger people, is a condition called keratoconus, which is an abnormally shaped eye cornea due to weakness of the collagen in the cornea. So we do have treatments now to try to prevent the progression of keratoconus called collagen cross-linking. But before cross-linking has become more kind of popular and widespread, there were definitely a lot of people who needed to have a corneal transplant because the cornea would become severely altered in shape. A lot of people, they couldn't see very well at all, meaning that they were legally blind, then they would need a corneal transplant. So that's just kind of one example of a pretty common condition that can lead to a transplant.
Okay. And is keratoconus something that starts developing in childhood?
Yes, that's correct. So previously, it was not diagnosed till probably young adulthood, but our ways of detecting keratoconus has become more sophisticated. So especially for more kind of advanced cases, we can detect it even elementary school-aged kids. But it is typically diagnosed probably in the early teenage years, and it is progressively gets worse in childhood through the 20s. So the key is to try to catch it early. The earlier you catch it, the better. And then as I mentioned before about collagen cross-linking is another type of procedure we do on the cornea to strengthen the collagen bonds in the cornea so that it does not progressively get weaker and become this abnormal shape. And we could try to prevent these people from needing a transplant in the future.
So if there's a parent that is listening to this, and let's say they have a teenage child, what are some of the things that they might look out for that tell them, hey, you know, my child may have keratoconus and to get it looked at?
Yeah, so it wouldn't be obviously every single teenage kid who would need this, but a good clue is having difficulty in vision, failing the school eye exam. That actually catches a lot of people because then they need to come and see an eye doctor. But it's also someone who just, their prescription keeps changing significantly. So every year they have to go get glasses or contact lenses and their prescription is changing a lot. And even with the new prescription, they're not seeing that well. So that's kind of a clue that something is wrong and should seek kind of further.
Okay, so it really sounds like one of the best things that you can do is to get frequent eye checkups, like once a year. Is that correct?
Yes. So I would say what's really good now is pediatricians are screening kids just in their office, you know, at an early age and is very good at kind of sending babies and children over if there's anything wrong. But in general, I would say for parents out there to just kind of at least have their kids checked at least once every few years. And then if there is obviously a problem or you're noticing something, they would need to be checked more often.
So I want to focus a little bit more on the cornea transplant itself. If someone is considering getting it for themselves or their child, what does the procedure look like and what does the healing process look like afterwards?
Sure. So there are a few different types of corneal transplants. So I'll just kind of speak broadly. It's an outpatient procedure, so it doesn't require an overnight hospitalization. The surgery is typically anywhere from 20 minutes to about an hour for a corneal transplant. I mentioned that it is a transplant, so it is taking tissue from a donor who passed away. Of course, the tissue is screened for any kind of infectious disease. This is including COVID or any kind of issues to make sure that there's no transmission, risk of transmission through the ocular tissue. And then the healing process can range, again, depending on the type of transplant, to a few months up to a year.
Okay, got it. And just maybe talk about some of the benefits and what life looks like after a transplant.
Yeah, so as I kind of mentioned before, corneal transplant is kind of for advanced corneal disease. So for these patients who require transplants, they're really not seeing very well. And so they're having difficulty in their activities of daily living. So from reading to looking at their bills to watching TV to driving. So they're very visually debilitated. So after a transplant, it gives them the opportunity to see again and to go back and do the types of daily activities and daily tasks that we all kind of take for granted. And so it can really be a life-changing experience.
Yeah, it absolutely sounds like it. So Dr. King, just before we close here today, is there anything else that you wanted to share with our audience about the cornea or the different types of surgeries that we've talked about today?
I think we kind of touched on everything, but really, again, it's just stressing the importance of regular eye exams and checkups. And if there is any difficulty with the vision or kind of desire to see better, you know, of course, please come and visit your nearest eye doctor.
Okay, Dr. Kang. Well, I think that is a great place to end. Thank you so much for your time today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
That's Dr. Joanne Kang, Director of Cornea and Refractive Surgery and Associate Professor of Ophthalmology and Visual Sciences at Montefiore Medical Center. For more information, call the Montefiore Department of Ophthalmology and Visual Sciences at 718-920-2020. If you found this podcast helpful, please share it on your social channels and be sure to check out the entire podcast library for topics of interest to you. My name is Prakash Chandran. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk next time.